Broadcasting live from South Texas, this is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, bringing you another amazing attempt to fill nearly an hour with nearly jokes and almost entertainment. Our guest this time around will be Mr. Dennis DiClaudio, author and web-based political japesman, who will attempt to transform episode 13 from an unlucky catastrophe to a little dancing Irish leprechaun of podcastery. We'll also feature a new installment of Naming of Parts, featuring a very prominent recent celebrity, some comedic slapdash from back in the days when I was funny, rather than just funny-looking, and possibly a new comical voice to replace the Russian one that makes my lungs hurt. The only way to find out what is to devote the precious moments of your life to the whimsical gewgaws and fripperies that are this week's Petardcast.
Oh, a petard is a mine used in medieval times, in battles that are now mostly fables. Though it sounds much the same as a derogatory name to refer to the mentally disabled. And all that aside, here it's a metaphor for punchlines that are dry and not at all moist. So here's a podcast filled with mysterious laughs upon which one might be hoist. Oh, Leonard Pierce. You are Ambrose Pierce, so don't disappear into booze and self-regard. Make your obscure jokes, talk with obscure folks, and let us all hope to see you hoist with your own petard.
Now we're going to return once again to Titbits, the column that I wrote for the New York Times from the 1960s to the 1980s. Of course, long-time listeners will recall that I was fired from that column in 1989 for having made up not only all of my columns, but the fact that I had a column in the first place. This was a column that I wrote during a period when, aside from writing the Titbits column, I had no gainful employment, and I became somewhat of an unemployment guru. Currently, I'm unemployed right now, so I thought I'd revive this, because if anything, it's certainly more relevant now than it was in 1989, or whenever I pretended to have written it. Hey, pal, I know you. I know you've been pawing through this newspaper, pretending you're looking for the business section. I bet you got dressed up in your best work clothes to make people think that you're here at the newsstand on your lunch hour instead of wandering around out of a job. You even got a copy of Vogue or Sports Illustrated to put in front of the employment manual you've been reading. You may be fooling everyone else, but you're not fooling me. I wrote this column just for you, loser. That's right, I said it. You're a loser. But here's the point. You're not as much of a loser as you could be. You've been wasting your precious time hanging around at newsstands, reading magazines on how to get a job, how to keep a job, how to get a raise. You've been squandering the precious gift of joblessness. But I can't blame you. You've been taught all your life how important it is to have a job, so that you can't get the most out of your unemployment. Well, that's what I'm here to change. I'm Leonard Pierce, author of Leonard Pierce's The Complete Loafer, Leonard Pierce's Maximizing Your Laziness, and my forthcoming volume, Leonard Pierce's Ultimate Unemployment. And I want to ask you a question. If you don't have a job, how come all you do all day is work? You get up first thing in the morning, email a bunch of resumes, make phone calls and check messages, run around the city, have meetings with people in suits, obsessively load your messages, revise paperwork dozens of times a day, comb through the paper and scour the internet, and no one's even paying you to do it. You did more slacking off when you had a job and then there was a fresh paycheck waiting at the end of each week. What's your excuse now? It's time to quit bringing yourself down with depressing questions like, how am I going to feed my family? And what am I doing with my life? And will I be able to pay the rent this month? And start lifting yourself up with energizing inquiries like, what beer goes best with Captain Crunch? And is it really possible to literally stay in bed all day? And what's on the aviation channel at 3 o'clock in the morning? We all know the common view of the unemployed person. He wakes up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, only gets up to go to the bathroom, watches talk shows and Eastern European tennis tournaments on the digital cable box he can't afford to pay for, eats cookie dough straight out of the tube, and goes to sleep only when he runs out of drugstore gin. Sure, that's just a stereotype. Not everyone lives like that. Like you, for example. So what's your problem? Why aren't you living the American dream? Now that you've finally got all the free time you wanted, why aren't you spending it swilling cheap coffee from the photocopy shop? Finally getting around to reading those old copies of Field and Stream your neighbors threw out, and going down to the wig store to see if Juanita is working today? Maybe you just don't know about the vast world of opportunity unemployment opens up. Maybe you've been working for so long, you think it's a natural way to live. Maybe you just need some help. Well, partner, help is what I'm here to give. With the Leonard Pierce Unemployment Experience Program in place, you'll learn all the things you need to supersize your joblessness. I'll teach you how to falsify records with the Department of Economic Security. I'll teach you how to file nuisance lawsuits. I'll teach you how to cover your doors and windows to keep out light and noise to accommodate your new 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. sleep schedule. I'll teach you what hospitals, vehicle impound lots, and bus stations have the best and least expensive vending machines. I'll teach you how to claim to be a grad student, a freelancer, or a band member, and plenty of other occupations that will allow you to have no income and still get dates. I'll teach you the best free weekly newspapers to read and the best cable stations to watch for hours at a time. I'll teach you all the best and most effective excuses to tell your landlord, credit card company, or public utility. I'll teach you about public parks, coffee shops, and off-track betting parlors, as well as dozens of terrific unemployed people hotspots. I'll teach you how to make delicious and nutritious meal out of capers, discarded pizza boxes, and things you can buy in gas stations. And most importantly, I'll introduce you to your three best friends, PlayStation, marijuana, and the Leonard Pierce Couch Comforter Pillow Integration System. Why should you follow my advice? Because I haven't had a job in 23 years. I was laid off from my job with the Sunshine Biscuit Company in 1966, and I've spent every single minute of my waking life, that's as many as 10 hours a day sometimes, perfecting these vital techniques. Aside from writing these three books, and if three lousy books in a quarter century doesn't persuade you that I know how to laze around, nothing will, I haven't done a blessed thing since the first Johnson administration. I've been on the dole longer than many people just becoming unemployed for the first time have been alive. I have been named American Gold Bricks Man of the Year a record-breaking 6 times. Am I going to bust my ass to help get you a job? Of course not. That's why you need to pick up my book. So embrace life. Embrace unemployment. Loosen your tie, take off those uncomfortable shoes, and buy Leonard Pierce's Ultimate Unemployment. Go home and get back in bed, for God's sake. It's only 11:15 a.m. And would it kill you to stop by the liquor store on the way home? Now you're learning. All right, welcome back to the Petardcast. I am joined by this week's special guest, Mr. Dennis DiClaudio. How are you, Dennis?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing, Leonard?
I'm doing well. Why don't you identify yourself, tell our theoretical listeners who you are and what you do.
Well, I am the news editor for Comedy Central's Indecision blog and website. I've written a couple books, including Man Versus Weather and the Hypochondriac's Pocket Guide to Horrible Diseases. You probably already have.
I do.
Yeah. that's probably the most interesting thing about me.
And those are with Penguin?
The first three were the guide series, the Pocket Guide series, and they were through Bloomsbury. And the other one was from Penguin. Man Versus Weather with Penguin.
Very good. Okay. And I assume those can be had at reputable bookstores?
I still find them around. Every once in a while, I'll go into the bookstore and check out their humor section or their science section, and they do pop up. But it's easier to find on Amazon.
All right. You currently live in Chicago.
Yes, I do. I've been here for about a year now.
And you moved there from Philadelphia?
No, I moved from Philadelphia to New York about 5 or 6 years ago.
All right.
I stayed there for about 4 years and then moved here following my my fiancé.
Very good. Do you want to make some indefensible blanket statements about the two cities?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I'll say this. Of the three cities, I'll say. I've always grown up as a with pizza as a major part of my diet. Mm-hmm. There's no real difference between Philadelphia pizza and New York pizza. They're equally good. And it's essentially the same thing. Chicago pizza, while good, is not pizza. I've decided. It's good. It should be called something else, but it's not pizza.
It's really more of a lasagna with a big hunk of bread underneath it.
Yeah, it is. It's something. I feel like it does a disservice to itself to be compared to New York pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be called tomato pie or something like that. One of the great things I love about Chicago is the hot dogs. It seems like, yeah, everywhere else in the country, like I've only lived on the East Coast, and people just don't, except for maybe like Coney Island, nobody really pays much attention to hot dogs, and they don't put a lot of effort into it. If you walk around in streets of New York or Philadelphia, you can buy a hot dog from any of the sandwich carts, which you don't have here, which is a depressing thing. But they're just these boiled sausages they just throw on a shitty bun. But people really pay attention and care about their hot dogs here, and yep. You know, they put everything on it. And I'm really, if I ever move away from Chicago, I'm going to really miss this kind of hot dog.
Well, you do a lot of political humor for Comedy Central. You run their IndecisionForever.com site, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
What do you think is the toughest thing about doing political humor?
The feeling of having scalding hot oil splattered in your face constantly that you're not allowed to turn away from, I would say, is the toughest thing. There are times when it's very fun. I love my job. I've never had a job like this before in my life. And it, there are days where I wake up and I'm so happy that I get to do this. I get to make fun of politicians and try to be funny for a living. But then there are other days where, like, I don't want, it's like the horror. I want to be able to turn away from the horror. Like, you can, if you're the average person can follow politics and then be like, all right, too much grossness. I'm going to spend a couple of days just, you know, watching Party Down or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning I have to wake up and just like, oh, that fucking, can I curse on your show?
Absolutely.
Okay. Like, oh, that fucking piece of shit said another horrible thing. And like, sometimes you just can't even, there are days on good days, I can be very pithy and make fun of it in a biting way. And I'm almost kind of proud of myself. And there's other days where I'm just like, look at this fucking asshole did another fuck. And I was like, I can't write that. That's not a joke. That's just me spitting bile onto the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I find that like whenever I write about, and you know, I write about politics occasionally on my blog, and I try and do it in an ironic way, if not a completely humorous way. And the thing that drives me crazy is it's such a rich vein for humor, but you have to not think about the fact that these are real people who are really affecting the way the country is run.
Yeah.
And their crazy ideas are really going to be put into effect. And
they're going into effect.
Yeah, and
right now.
People's lives are going to be ruined because of it, you know. It's such a form of gallows humor that you just really have to distance yourself from it.
I would love to be a sociopath or have a sociopath button that I could push and just blanketly make fun of things and have it and be like float above it and have it not affect me and just read everything. But I can't do that. I get caught up in things and it affects my sense of humor sometimes. Mm. Which actually, like being angry makes me less funny. Some people get more angry when they're funny. I'm like funnier when I can be unmoved by it.
What do you think is the richest vein in current political humor?
Well,
who provides you with the most nonstop entertainment?
Michelle Bachmann, for sure. I mean, because she's kind of like a redux of Sarah Palin, but even stupider and even weirder. Like she seems to be even have less scruples and less be more delusional. And plus, I think a lot of people have just gotten tired of making fun of Sarah Palin, and even a lot of Michelle Bachmann is kind of like. Who is that that crazy guy who ran 4 years ago? The
Alan Keyes?
Alan Keyes. She's kind of like Alan Keyes if people paid attention to Alan Keyes.
Right. I don't know if you saw this, but there was an interview in GQ with Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah, yeah.
And he mentioned that his dream ticket, his Republican dream ticket was...
Bachmann and
Michelle Bachmann and Alan, the black senator from Georgia. I'm drawing a blank on his last name, but I thought, man, that's my dream ticket too, because they'd be completely unelectable.
I know.
Because he's black for one thing, and if there's one thing Republicans love, it's black people. You know.
Well, I don't know that much about that senator. But I know so much about Michelle Bachmann, and what drives me crazy is people like Andrew Breitbart, who is clearly a very intelligent person, very very cunning person, and what does he really like? How cynical can a person like that be to want Michelle Bachmann? I mean, like, obviously, I can see why a person like him would want. Someone who's just going to blindly follow the party line and do it with almost no aplomb and just drive through anything that the movement asks for. But how cynical do you have to be intelligent and just realize, oh, this person's going to be a horrible, horrible president, mm-hmm. and support that person, or at least go on record supporting that person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other guy, the senator whose last name I'm forgetting. He's mostly He's mostly notable for the fact that he tortured prisoners in Iraq.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
I'm like, really? That's the guy you want as president? I mean, even if you think it's okay to torture prisoners in Iraq, you would have to admit from a practical standpoint that's going to turn off a lot of voters, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it seems to me almost like he's kidding. Like, he's almost like, I don't really mean it, you know? I just picked two crazy people out of a hat, you know, because it would annoy liberals. But then again, that kind of seems to be the modus operandi of a lot of the fringe right movement, is that they do things not because they think it's going to have any effect, but because they think it'll get on liberals' nerves, you know?
Yeah, it's infuriating. It's infuriating. It's and just to hear, I don't know. And then the other side of it is that you get so angry with the one side that you kind of instinctually turn to be like, all right, well, I hate all of those people so much that I must be on these people's side. So you think like, oh, I must think like a Democrat. And I guarantee you that you probably don't think like a Democrat because you aren't completely spineless.
Yeah. Well, it's for one thing, it's very hard to be a Democrat these days if you're a big union supporter. The Democrats have shit all over the unions for the last 10 years at least. And
yeah, it's
they're certainly, as we recently saw, they have no reticence about getting involved in pointless military disputes. So.
No, and they are as shameless as Republicans as in bowing to congressional power, power.
Infuriatingly, they're ineffective. They do all this selling out, and yet they're never able to really get anything done.
No, well, not for us at any rate, or for the Democratic cause. But they do a lot for corporations. Like Democrats were behind most of the Internet. What's the thing called on the Internet? Net neutrality.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones who are stifling that net neutrality.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look at, if you want to go all the way back to Clinton, look at NAFTA. You know, he was the driving force behind that. And that was nothing but a big thank you, you know, here, have some cheap labor, you know, for the big corporations, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's, So you have, we really, you have nobody to really support. There's nobody who you can kind of hang your flag on. You can just, all you can just do is just be like, these people are less bad. And that's generally how, and you can see why I'm so funny on the internet now.
Sure. Well, on that note, are you ready to have a dialogue?
Absolutely. Let's go for it.
Say, have you ever wondered what the difference is in brands of gasoline? Well, we've got news for you. There really isn't one. You yank the oil up out of the ground, do some refining and processing, clean it up a bit for the feds, and stick it in the pumps. It's all pretty much the same. So why pay more for some fancy brand name? PD's Cut Rate Gas Company. What you need for cheap.
Lately, we've been hearing a lot of loose talk from certain discount gas companies about how gas is all the same. Well, we here at Motor Co. haven't been around since 1918 selling generic products that are just the same as everyone else's. Sure, our fuel costs a little more, but our special processes, not to mention our service, selection, and name you can trust, makes it worth it. In this world, you get what you pay for. So pay for Motor Co. Petroleum.
Hey folks, if you've got the time, why don't you fill up your car with affordable, dependable PD's Cut Rate Gas, drive it down to your local Motor Co. Petroleum station, and ask them what exactly they're talking about. Service? You mean the guy who stands behind a counter and takes your money while you pump your own gas, just like every place else in America? Selection? You mean regular, premium, and unleaded, or the fancy names they give them to soak you out of more of your hard-earned dollars? A name you can trust? How about this name? Cut Rate. Like as in, we sell it cheaper. So unless you want to be a sucker, shop here. Petey's Cut Rate Gas Company. Don't be a chump all your life, my friends.
Petey's Cut Rate Gas seems to think you, the American consumer, are some kind of a chump or a sucker. We here at Motor Co. Petroleum have a lot more respect for you. For example, we have 5 different kinds of gasoline, including diesel and our brand new Citrus Berry Blast, instead of just 3. And contrary to popular belief, we don't just sell the same gas as everybody else. We put chemicals and additives and shit in it, so it, like, you know, makes your car go better. We have real scientists who do this. Does PD's have scientists? The fuck they do. They have that retard who works in the tire department who can't even spell car. Motor Co. Petroleum. With science.
Science? Bullshit. Look, people, if you want to live the rest of your days being a mark for some smooth-talking Sharpie in a $100 suit, be our guest. You go ahead and pay a nickel extra per gallon because the hustlers at Motor Co. hire some dipshit from a land-grant college chemistry department to throw $2 worth of fuel injector cleaner in every tanker full. Enjoy your new life as an easy target for East Coast smoothies. We'll just be here selling cheap gas and fixing your car before you go off and buy some goddamn magic beans or something. Petey's Cut Rate Gas Company. Our mechanics didn't go to some fancy finishing school, so they might not be the world's best spellers, but they can actually fix a fucking car.
Have you or someone you love been insulted by a cut rate discount gasoline vendor? Have you missed work, gotten behind on your bills, or suffered serious injury because Petey Meyerson or someone in his employ has called you a chump, a mark, a sucker, or an easy target? Have you experienced mental anguish and humiliation because a gas commercial used impolite words in its advertising? Then you may be due for a large cash settlement. If you'd like to join a class action suit against Petey, the Cut Rate Gas Company, call the trial attorneys of Jasmine and Hollowell and ask for a Motor Co. lawsuit by pressing 1 at the prompt. Jasmine and Hollowell. Because you have lots of rights.
Petey's. Cheap gas. No lawyers. Right now it's time for another installment of a feature we like to call Naming of Parts, where we try and fail to learn something about Hollywood celebrities by taking a look at the names of the characters that they played over the years. This time I think we'd like to take a look at Charlie Sheen. His name has been in the news lately because a few weeks ago his brain melted and leaked out down his throat. And ever since then, he's been making an increasingly calculated number of lunatic statements to the press in order to further his career after having talked his way right out of a starring role in the most popular sitcom on television. Now, you might be surprised to learn that Charlie Sheen, for a relatively young man, has done a lot of roles. He's been in quite a few movies and television series, and he's played a lot of characters, but very few of them have full names. In fact, a lot of them have one-syllable names, as if he couldn't quite handle learning the names of a character who had more than one syllable in them. But let's not cast any further aspersions on Charlie Sheen's mental capacity and how much it may have been damaged by his face constantly being buried in either a mound of cocaine or a hooker's vagina. Let's go straight into naming of parts for Charlie Sheen. We're going to once again lay down the ground rules. We only take a look at movies where he played a role rather than playing himself. No animation, no voiceovers, nothing like that. And of course, in order to learn as much as we can, we're not going to watch any of these movies. We're just going to make blanket statements based on the names of the characters. Charlie Sheen has played a lot of people who are things. Cop Number One, Valet, Thief, Man Shaving, which is a good role for him, Manager of a Burger Joint, of course, his famous role as Boy in Police Station in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the entertaining-sounding Barbie-loving bartender in Loose Women, and there's a character named Bean that he played in a movie called Cadence, and actually, I think this might be a nickname rather than Charlie Sheen playing an actual Bean, but you never know with that guy. Surprising number of characters who have only first names. Again, this is not casting an aspersion on his mental capacity, maybe on the mental capacity of the screenwriters he chose to work with. There's a Ken, a Paul, a Bob, a Ron, a Ryan, two syllables there, a Peter in a movie with the awesome name Courage Mountain. Courage Mountain. Two Matts, one in a TV movie and one, of course, his famous role in Red Dawn. A Chris, a Casey, and a Cappy. I like that last one. I can't quite picture Charlie Sheen playing a guy with as jaunty a name as Cappy. But and then two very classical names from his period of being a serious actor, Aramis and Maximus. I bet he'd like to call himself Maximus now. Plenty of generic wasps in the Charlie Sheen filmography. There's a Bud Dyerson, a Jake Peterson, a Jake Casey with a K. Not Jake, the Casey is with a K. But that one gets bonus points because he was also called the Wraith, and you get a little credit for playing a generic wasp if he's also a superhero or a monster or whatever he was. Ted Varick, an Artie Mitchell, Bob Rogers Jr., a Bobby Bishop, a Ricky Vaughn, of course, in Major League, a Carl Taylor, a Chris Martin, a Chuck Traynor, I like that one, Traynor with a Y, Charlie Crawford, a Charlie Harper, and a different Charlie Harper. Not surprisingly, Charlie Sheen has played a lot of characters named Charlie. That really minimizes the onset confusion. Daniel Parks, a Tom Logan, a James McGregor, a James Russell, and two Uber Wasps, which means that they have three names, Ryan Edward Turner and a Jefferson Davis Hammond. I haven't been mentioning the names of the movies that Charlie Sheen has appeared on, but there's some really good ones. Charlie has appeared in some fine-sounding movies. Catch Fire, that's a good one. We mentioned Courage Mountain. No Code of Conduct, Shadow Conspiracy, some good movies in that. Boy, I wish I'd seen them. Not as many tough guy roles as you might think for Charlie Sheen, but there are some of them. There's a Bo Richards, Bo with an O. If you spell Bo with an E-A-U, that's not a tough guy name. Lyle Wilder in a movie with the hilarious name Bad Day on the Block. Bud Fox, which was his character in Wall Street, really wasn't a tough guy, but that's a tough guy name, and the movie was made during that period when Wall Street financial advisors were attempting to reinvent themselves as tough guys. a Dan Saxon in a movie called Beyond the Law. That sort of sounds like a Steven Seagal role, like he plays a white supremacist cop or something. Dan Saxon. And then my favorite from a movie with another Steven Seagal title, Terminal Velocity, he played a character named Ditch Brody. Who is nicknamed Ditch? What do you have to do to get nicknamed Ditch? That's what I want to know. Not surprisingly, for a guy who keeps harping on the ethnicity of his TV show producer, Charlie Sheen has not played a lot of ethnic characters. The closest he has ever come is a character named David Ackerman and a character named Zane Zeminski, which I'm assuming is either just a generic Polish person or a Polish Jew, but I'm pretty sure there's never been anybody named Zane Zeminski in real life. A couple of people with titles, both lieutenants, I guess, because nobody would promote Charlie Sheen to a position of captain or beyond. There's Lieutenant Dale Hawkins in Navy SEALs, and Lieutenant Topper Harley, of course, which was his Hot Shots character. Now, we invented a new category for Charlie Sheen in this week's naming of parts because it just seemed appropriate, and that is names that sound like they're actually sexual references. Charlie has had three of these, and, you know, I'm going to introduce them in order of how perverted they sound. In Deadfall, he played a character named Fats Grip. In Young Guns, he was Dick Brewer. And in 8 Men Out, he played an actual real-life person whose name, nonetheless, is terribly obscene-sounding, Hap Felsch. So write into this program at info@ludicalive.com and suggest what sexual act you think Hap Felsch refers to, and the best entry will win a prize. A great man once said, "The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often teared with their bones." That is certainly true of another great man, my grandfather. To the world, he was a horrible killer, a vile abomination, a sadist, a betrayer of all the principles of science and medicine, and one of the worst criminals in the Nazi regime. To me, he was Großvati Jojo, always quick with a joke, ready with a candy treat, eager to loan you a textbook or a high-powered electric drill. Mention the name Josef Mengele today, and you will get naught but lectures, moralistic cluckings of the tongue, and stern approbation. The evil that he did, if you wish to call it that, I am not here to argue the so-called right and wrong of Grandpa Joe's illuminating medical research, has lived on long after him, with the good that he did all but forgotten in a flood of stereotyping, snap judgments, and historical forgetfulness. No, I am not here to deny that the man was not a saint. He had his flaws, like all men. His career often kept him away from his family, and his marriage suffered because of it. He was not the best manager of money. And many physicians, concerned more with their reputations than how much of a positive impact they were having on the body of human knowledge, would have frowned at a fatality rate of some 98% among their patients. But my grandfather was also a good man, and more than that, he was a great doctor. He used an opportunity. Yes, I call it an opportunity. Others like to throw around meaningless buzzwords like Holocaust, but did you know that in Japanese, the word for Holocaust is the same as the word for opportunity? Few men have ever been afforded that opportunity to do the best they could for science and humanity. He added more to the body of medicinal knowledge than we may ever know. And for this, due to the small-minded prejudice of ignorant and simplistic judgments of history, he is called a monster. For the monster have insisted that his specimens, or patients, as people insist on calling him in this age of political correctness, be clean, fit, and without sexual diseases. For the monster have taken care to keep his research facilities far away from the housing areas, so that the screams of agony and constant death rattles did not disturb the specimen's remaining family. For the monster have taken conscientious, detailed, and remarkably complete notes. Großvati Jojo knew history would read his works, and he wrote with an eye towards that historical legacy. Little did he suspect that the same posterity would choose to focus on trifling details of his work, such as whether or not the patients consented or survived, instead of looking at the bigger picture. And what does that bigger picture show us, if only we are willing to look with unbiased eyes? It teaches us many small lessons which in aggregate add up to a massive and vital contribution to the psychological, biomedical, and physiological knowledge of all mankind. Without my grandfather's necessary work, we might not know exactly how long a person can survive after being submerged constantly in freezing cold water. We might not know exactly how much blood a person can lose and still be forcibly kept conscious. We might not know that you cannot run continually on a treadmill for 6 days without your heart exploding. We might not know the various telltale facial tics that can help a doctor diagnose his patient as suffering from being crushed under huge bolts of lead. And we might not know that Jews are much more likely to develop fatal cases of pneumonia, spontaneous facial bleeding, or negative reactions to environmental toxins in a prison camp environment than are Gentiles. Ladies and gentlemen of the Dusseldorf University Medical Review Board, I am asking you for understanding. I am asking you not to repeat the errors of the past and to rectify a terrible crime. I am asking you to forget the prejudices that lie behind my name, to let my grandfather's evil be interred with his bones, and let the good that he did live on after him. As you will see in the packets I have prepared for this presentation, I have developed a theory that people of certain religious persuasions will suffer permanently harmful or fatal heart conditions if their heads are twisted around 180 degrees by an industrial clamp. With your help, with your generous financial assistance, and most of all, with your understanding, my theory may soon be confirmed. As it so often does, another highly attenuated episode of the Petardcast comes to an end on a horribly offensive note. We hope you've enjoyed this trek through the decaying mind of a man who was told in sixth grade that he was funny, and we'd like to thank Dennis DiClaudio for being our special guest for the week. If you'd like to purchase one of his books, they are available through all reputable online vendors, as well as the more recognizable publishing bootleggers, and his work can be seen on a regular basis at indecisionforever.com. As always, the Petardcast theme song is by Hayden Childs of North Kakalaka, and the ho-ho is the unofficial snack cake of this program. Potential guests of this show may write to guests@ludiclive.com, and detractors and ill-wishers should direct their rancor to info@ludiclive.com. The program is always available for your hearing pleasure at ludiclive.com or as a free download from the iTunes Music Store. This episode is dedicated to Hans and Sophie Scholl and to Duke Togo. And thanks, of course, to you for listening, which we hope you'll be doing again in 2 weeks when we'll be bringing you another special guest, another batch of hard-to-follow comedic meanderings, and audio glitches that will be sampled by confused German techno artists. Signing off from the 3 square miles of the United States where dickhead is a compliment, this is your Petardcast.